This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. For many Americans, this is the most consequential election of their lifetime. Since the spring, hundreds of thousands of Americans have died from COVID-19, and every week infections are rising at unprecedented rates. More than 8 million Americans have been pushed into poverty, many fearing they won't be able to feed themselves or their families. Others are struggling to keep a roof over their head while scrambling to find work. The country is also reckoning with systematic and historical mistreatment of women and people of color. Protests have reached a fever pitch on both sides of the political divide. As a result, Americans are taking to the polls in droves. So far, more than 93 million people have voted early, many waiting on long lines in the heat or the rain, sometimes for hours. Today on the show, a final look at both presidential candidates, and we begin with the incumbent. During his 2016 campaign, candidate Donald Trump appealed to his base by promising a myriad of actions to, as he said, make America great again.
I pledge to every citizen of our land that I will be president for all Americans. I will build a great, great wall on our southern border, and I will have Mexico pay for that wall. We are going to fix our inner cities.
We're going to repeal Obamacare and replace it with something much better.
And rebuild our highways, bridges, tunnels, airports, schools, hospitals.
We are going to renegotiate the disaster known as NAFTA. We're going to renegotiate.
Finally, take care of our great veterans.
I'm pro-life. The judges will be pro-life.
We will get along with all other nations willing to get along with us.
We're going to drain the swamp of Washington
and have the strongest economy anywhere in the world.
I alone can fix it.
And now, 4 years on, and with Election Day tomorrow, the big question is, has President Trump kept his promises? Anita Kumar is with me, and she's a White House correspondent for Politico. Anita, welcome to the show.
Sure. Thanks for having me back.
So on The Takeaway, Anita, we have a few guiding principles, foundations of the show, things we observe in this country. They include three gaps: the truth gap, the wealth gap, and the empathy gap. If we use those gaps as a guide, how has the president done, Anita, in truth?
Well, we've seen him exaggerate a lot. We've seen him lie a lot. We've seen him mostly recently on the campaign trail talking about his accomplishments, but some of those accomplishments didn't happen under his watch. Some of them didn't happen at all. So it's not been good for the last few years, particularly the last few months.
Let's talk a little bit about how he's done in terms of the wealth gap, which the way we define it is how communities of color are often earn less wealth than their white counterparts. Has that gap grown?
Yeah, I don't think he's really changed it that much. You know, there's been some things that have helped some people. There's been some things that have hurt. You know, one of his biggest accomplishments was the tax cuts back in his first year in office. And while it did impact all Americans, it primarily helped those that are wealthy. So not the part of society that you're talking about.
And finally, the empathy gap.
Well, that's probably the biggest one that a lot of people talk about, which is looking at primarily his immigration policy and his rhetoric that people would say there's a lot lacking there. I mean, that's what Joe Biden is primarily campaigning on, that Donald Trump doesn't have the empathy to be president, both in his policies, and you mentioned coronavirus, talking a little bit about what's happening there, but also in just what his everyday language is. And, you know, as he's been campaigning at these rallies, some of that rhetoric gets even more strong and pronounced, what some of those things are that they're talking about. So, you know, if you're the Democrats and you're Joe Biden, you would definitely say that is it, where he's lacking.
And yet many of his supporters actually like the president because of that lack of empathy.
You're exactly right. When I talk to supporters all over the country, one of the first things that they say about him is that they like that he is brash and that he says exactly what he's thinking and he doesn't hold back. It's one of the biggest appeals of Donald Trump to them.
So let's kind of go through this report card on how the president has done outside of those gaps, Anita. One of the most, top of mind things right now for many people is the Supreme Court of the United States. The president, and one of his biggest promises to the country when he took office, was to reshape not only the Supreme Court, but the federal judiciary writ large. Many would say, at the very least, at the Supreme Court, he's achieved that. What's your assessment, Anita, of how the president has done reshaping the courts?
This is definitely one of his biggest achievements. Not only the Supreme Court, which of course gets most of the attention, he has obviously three justices now, one third of the court, but he has appointed and gotten the Senate to confirm more than 200 judges, about 220. And it's not just that it's a lot. It's reshaped certain courts. So there are certain courts, appellate courts, federal courts that have flipped. So, you know, they were liberal leaning, now they're conservative leaning. There are some that have moved more to be conservative. Overall, he has about a fourth of the active federal judges in America. That's a huge number, and it's going to outlive him. It's going to outlive his presidency. This is something that's going to change the court system for, you know, a generation and years to come.
In terms of all of the promises he's made, and we're going to go through them by topic, I would almost say that this is probably one of the most significant changes in terms of the legacy, if the president is not reelected, that he will leave behind.
Definitely agree with you. And one of the reasons is not just the sheer number. It's that judges stay for a long time, right? It's not an executive order or even a law that can be changed by Congress in a year or 2 years. It's something that's going to last for quite a long time because these are appointments. I mean, look at the Supreme Court, lifetime appointments. And, you know, this is changing the Supreme Court, you know, which was 5-4. You know, the latest justice is changing, a liberal justice to a conservative. So now we're 6-3. That's going to change issues all over the country for years to come.
Let's turn to criminal justice for a second. The president has made promises to reform criminal justice. One of the ways that he's attempted to do that is through something called the First Step Act. Anita, what is that and how successful has it been?
You know, this is a really confusing one because he talked in 2016 and he's still talking about it in 2020 about being tougher on crime, you know, putting people away and all that sort of stuff. He's talked about specific cases. He talks about it in general. But actually, the First Step Act, which was a bipartisan law that Congress passed and he signed into law, really does try to deal with some of, you know, reducing sentences and sentencing disparities. It was, praised by African Americans and Democrats. And so it sort of goes against some of the rhetoric he's talking about. But people say it didn't go far enough on this particular issue. This was negotiated by his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, in the White House. So it's sort of a mixed bag. Definitely this was the biggest thing he's done on this issue. But people say hasn't gone far enough.
You mentioned the president's rhetoric, law and order, tough on crime. I mean, that's a lot often considered, particularly law and order, considered a racial dog whistle for many. But he's also really made a big effort, the president has, in terms of getting support from police and police unions and military personnel, and at the same time being at odds with top military officials. What would you assess his record to be with military personnel?
Yeah, it's a really interesting contradiction there. It seems like it, you know, but the police is sort of, you know, local police. That's what he's generally talking about when he's talking about police. You know, he accuses Joe Biden of trying to defund the police, which he's not. But, you know, he is at odds with the military officials in his own administration, even top officials. If he gets a second term, we're thinking that there's going to be changes, even perhaps at the Pentagon, perhaps the secretary over there of defense. It's partly because of what his promise was in 2016. He said he was going to end America's endless wars. Now, he did not do that. I will say that every president recently has come in and said, you know, I remember Barack Obama saying the same thing. We're going to get out of Afghanistan. It didn't happen. It's a very tough thing when you get into office and, you know, your military officials, advisors tell you if you do this, harm will come to that region. And so he has tried to do it. He has reduced troop numbers, but he didn't get where he wanted. And that was mostly he was at odds with those military officials who kept pushing him not to do that. So over and over again, you saw him not agreeing with them.
We also heard at the top, Anita, that he pledged to take care of America's veterans. But when President Trump was candidate Trump, he got into a lot of criticism for comments that he made about John McCain. How has he done treating American veterans?
Well, he likes to talk about this a lot, and he mentions actually a bill that passed that did help veterans, and people say that it did, but it actually didn't pass under his tenure. There were some efforts made at the end of the Obama administration to help veterans primarily with health care. But you mentioned, I'm glad you mentioned the rhetoric, because if people are listening, that's probably the thing they remember the most, right? It's what he said about veterans, or what people, what these leaks have been that he has said about military officials and veterans. You mentioned John McCain. He denies that. He says that he has always been supportive. So it's a little bit unclear, right? Behind the scenes, is he really saying some of these things or not? Of course, he claims he doesn't say these things about John McCain, but we've actually seen him say those publicly.
Anita, one of the other things we talked about are the tax cuts that the president promised to Americans. And I'm wondering, you know, tax cuts are one thing, but there are also unemployment numbers that have come out. And the most recent unemployment numbers say the unemployment rate declined to 7.9%. That's according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Does that give us a sense of how the Trump economy has done?
Well, the economy was doing well before. There were signs that it wasn't, but pretty, you know, we'd seen some growth in the end of the Obama administration. We saw some growth. Obviously, the pandemic came in. Unemployment hit about 15% or almost 15% and then has come down. So, you know, people argue that it's because of those things that he has put into place, deregulation and other things, that the economy is starting to turn back around.
He's also made a lot about the third quarter GDP numbers. A lot of people say the stock market is not the American kitchen table, if you will. But the president is saying the GDP growth was up over 33%. Does that matter?
You know, it matters to some people, I guess. It doesn't matter. You talked about that wealth gap before. It doesn't matter to some of those people that aren't feeling it, right? He likes to talk about the economy in terms of the stock market. That's one of his biggest things he talks about. But it doesn't impact every single person. Others would want him to do other things. There's no doubt about it, though. The economy has done well until the pandemic, and it's turning around. It's still in bad shape, though. So he's more to do.
Anita, let's turn to healthcare for a minute. It's a big issue on the minds of many voters. The president campaigned and talked a big game about ending the Affordable Care Act. He has not done that. What has stopped him?
Oh, so many things. Mostly Congress, I guess. You know, that was one of his biggest issues. He came in there, said he was going to repeal the Affordable Care Act. If you remember back to the beginning of his term, there was that vote in Congress, and this was that overnight vote in the middle of the night. Senator John McCain went in there and voted against this repeal. You know, the Republicans really had a hard time coming up with what they wanted the replacement to be. That was really the big problem. And so Republicans on Capitol Hill disagreed on what that should be. Three Republicans were against him in the Senate. He did not get that vote. He has since talked about it for 4 years. Even recently, he's saying he's going to come out with a new plan. Now, what the White House says is that he's cobbled together a lot of different things. He's done different executive orders, and overall, together, that makes up a healthcare plan. But it doesn't replace the Affordable Care Act, which is still in place. So to say he would replace it hasn't happened. Now, he is asking the Supreme Court to repeal it, to get rid of it completely. That won't happen until later at their next term, and we don't really know what's going to happen with that.
On the topic of healthcare, of course, we cannot not talk about the coronavirus pandemic. More than 230,000 Americans are dead so far as a result of that. President Trump promised a vaccine. He's been fighting with Anthony Fauci. He did start something called Operation Warp Speed. Where is that? Where does it stand?
You know, I mean, it's just really, honestly, a mixed bag. People say that he did not display that leadership. When you talk to local state officials and school officials, they did not get the tests and the supplies they needed fast enough. Even testing now is still lagging. You know, Americans might know that if they try to go get a test, it might be hard to get. It might take too long to get it. So that's really where we are. And of course, you mentioned the vaccine, which is hugely important, something that he promised would be available before November 3rd, which hasn't happened yet. Still waiting on that. And there are a number of promising you know, companies out there promising something, looking at something in these final stages, but still probably won't be around till next year.
Anita, in the first few weeks of President Trump's administration, I just remember the president signing a myriad of executive orders. He's continued to use executive orders as a way to get his policies through. How effective has that strategy been for the president so far?
Well, it's mixed. You know, I will say a lot of presidents do that. I remember when President Obama, not less maybe in the beginning and more later, when Congress just wouldn't pass things that he wanted to pass. And he said, I'm going to use my phone and my pen. I still remember it. And that was really alluding to the fact that he was going to sign in executive orders. So it's been mixed. Some of them, you look at them and you say, well, that doesn't really do that much. It's an executive order for to study something or to put a task force together. And others, he's tried to do, you know, something that's been much more significant. I'll remember right at the beginning of the administration where one of the first thing he signed was the travel ban. Remember, that was a big promise he made in 2016 to stop Muslims or some Muslims from coming into this country. So he tried that three different times. They were contested or challenged in court, and finally one stuck. So the third iteration of that did stay.
One place where the president has relied on executive orders is with immigration. He's used 400 executive orders actions so far to attempt to shut down asylum slash refugee admissions. How successful has he been there? And I guess success is depends on how you define it. The president's strategy has really been to dissuade people from entering the country rather than to deport them.
Yeah, I think this is one of the more significant where he's had more significant role than some other issues. So we mentioned, you know, the travel ban. He has talked a lot about deporting everyone, you know, all illegal people who are here illegally. That didn't happen. But he has carved into that and cut into that. And he's also cut into people that could come here. I remember one of the most significant things he did was stop foreign workers from coming. And he basically said, I'm not going to give visas to them. That's a huge number of people. We're talking about people with no skills. We're people talking about people with high skills, all of the above. He said he did that because of the coronavirus. But really, with that order, he was able to do that. So significant. Another significant immigration one was reducing the number of refugees he was allowing. It reached about 85,000 during the Obama term, and now he's looking at next year at 10 or 20,000. So it's really, really been reduced.
Anita, in an interview with NBC News, Stephen Miller, who's an advisor to the president, particularly on issues of immigration, laid out in a very aggressive plan, should the president be reelected, to include a freeze on immigration and punishing sanctuary cities. Is this along the lines of what the president has already outlined, and is it something that appeals to his base, should he be reelected?
Yeah, it really does appeal to his base. One of the remarkable things about 2020 is that this election really wasn't about immigration. I thought it would be, but obviously because of the pandemic, things got changed around. But I think still that message is there. He still wants to do certain things. What Stephen Miller was talking about were things that he had tried to do and didn't accomplish or along the same vein. So I do think that we're going to see more of that come next term if he's elected. Interesting, he mentioned sanctuary cities. That's something that President Trump has been trying on, and the courts have pushed him off of that. He has not been able to defund sanctuary cities.
And we should mention that New York is one of those cities. Anita Kumar is a White House correspondent for Politico. Anita, thanks so much for going through this report card with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.